Welcome to Ever-Changing Technology. I'm your host, Jim Bradfield. And this show is about helping you adapt, lead, and thrive in a world that's moving faster than ever. Whenever you're a business owner, tech enthusiast, or team leader, we bring the insights to keep up and get ahead. Today's conversation is one every leader needs to hear about cybersecurity, the recommended cyber and AI resilience, and how to keep networks secure in the future. Now, our guest, Steve Brining, knows exactly how to answer that. Steve honed his skills for over 25 years as a cybersecurity expert with PatchLink, McAfee, Beyond Trust, and other technology companies, now Acronis. Steve has a master's in business administration and e-business and master's in science and technology and innovation management with specialization in cybersecurity. And he's a commanding officer in the Arizona Army National Guard and a member of the FBI InfraGuard. So Steve, welcome to Ever-Changing Technology.
I appreciate you having me today, Jim. Good to see you again.
Yeah, it's good to see you. So just a quick intro here. Steve and I met in Spain about a month or so ago. And so that was fortuitous. Anyway, cyber resilience goes beyond firewalls and antivirus. So the challenge many companies face is that, you know, traditional cybersecurity focuses on prevention while resilience prepares them to operate through attacks. Supply chain vulnerabilities, sophisticated threat actors, and new compliance pressure, you know, means that companies must treat resilience as a business-wide priority, not just an IT function. So Steve, what exactly is cyber resilience and how is that different from cybersecurity?
I would say that cybersecurity is traditionally focused on prevention, you know, deploying, like you said, firewalls, encryption, access controls, endpoint detection, and some other technical or even procedural safeguards, if you will, to stop threats before they can cause harm. I mean, that's a necessary foundation, but, you know, as we're going to get into it in today's threat landscape, that's really no longer sufficient, right? I always think of the infamous CIA triad, right? Confidentiality, integrity, and availability for this piece, right? So we design things to aim at protecting as a discipline cybersecurity, but there's a much rich, for lack of a better term, richer ecosystem for practices, frameworks, I would even say the human element in technology. Well, cyber resilience to me goes even a step further. It's more of a holistic organizational wide capability. I would say it would be to anticipate, withstand, recover from, and adapt, if you will, to, like, I'll call it adverse cyber events. That could be malicious actors, system failures, even human error, insider threats. Think of it like organizational immune strength rather than just the armor that's put on the outside. So if you think about it, cybersecurity would be like, oh, detect and block a phishing email. Cyber resilience approach would make sure that even if you have the email that would say slip through the cracks and the malware is deployed, are your backups clean? Your critical servers, are they going to stay online through failover systems? Does your IR or incident response team spring into action within minutes? Are your customers informed transparently, really to minimize downtime, financial loss, and for lack of a better term, reputational damage? So if I had to really put just a few words, cybersecurity equals prevention. Cyber resilience is continuity, adaptation, and trust. And especially with AI now, and I know we're going to get into that, the insider threats and even nation state actors that we deal with, you know, let's put it this way, assuming a breach now is almost like a baseline expectation, not even a worst case scenario.
Yeah, so why is cyber resilience more critical now than going into 2026? What's happening?
Well, by 2026 and since December, right, there's been converging trends, if you will, that make it almost non-negotiable. And one of those is regulatory pressures, right? Global mandates, EU's NIS2 directive, even in the here in the United States, the SEC cybersecurity disclosure rules, and even in specific sector frameworks like financial and healthcare, do require companies to report material cyber incidents within tight windows, some of those 72 hours. So regulators are no longer just asking, hey, did you get hacked? But like, how quickly did you recover? What was your impact? Could your customers trust you? For 2026 on this topic, I would say definitely the AI driven threats. Gen AI, right, allows attackers to craft very highly convincing spear phishing lures. I'm almost saying to a point where if it's written like, it looks like an English professor, you should be careful these days. Automate vulnerability discovery, mimic legitimate user behavior to evade detection on that. And people, defenders can outpace this now if you're just doing prevention alone. So they got to have that resilient architecture to limit the blast radius, if you will, and enable that rapid recovery. Critical infrastructure, energy grids, healthcare, transportation, financial services, right? They're becoming more digitized and definitely more interconnected, right? So a single breach can cascade across different sectors. So you got to make sure that your resiliency there to make sure that those essential services remain available during a crisis. Big one for me I've seen is the evolution in ransomware. Attackers, they do combine data theft with encryption, right? That's the double extortion. Seeing them even threaten to notify customers or regulators, right? If it's not paid, right? That's a triple extortion. And even threatening DDoS attacks, right? Which makes a quadruple extortion. So they need to be able to restore from operations really quickly from immutable backups. And they need to confidently communicate with the stakeholders on that. So I guess in short, 2026 isn't going to reward the most secure companies. I think it's going to reward the most adaptable ones.
Yeah. So that makes a lot of sense, actually. And the other thing is, now, how does supply chain risks tie into that resilience planning? What do you need to do there?
Yeah, supply chain to me in 2026 is a concern. I think most companies today, they operate, again, very deeply interconnected. You can have strong internal defenses, but say your payroll provider or cloud vendor or your logistics partner or software supplier is compromised. Well, you're at risk. And sometimes there's very little visibility or control into that. So let me think of a couple of examples. Remember SolarWinds? I think that was in 2020. Mm-hmm. Well, the attack, and it's not to pick on any company, but you know, it allowed hackers to practically infiltrate thousands of companies. It was a single software update. MOVEit, transfer vulnerability, that was in 2023. That exposed data across a lot of companies using their fire transfer protocol by third parties. And then, of course, Okta, a lot of people know who that company is. 2022, a support contractor, I know they showed how even if you had privileged identity infrastructure there, could be compromised through a vendor. So when it comes to supply chain, what does cyber resilience mean in supply chain? Well, you got to map your dependencies. You have to know every third, fourth, fifth party that's even touching your data or systems. I would say you got to enforce minimum security standards. Contracts, they need to include cybersecurity clauses, say audit rights, incident notification SLAs or service level agreements. Segmenting access. Vendors should never have broad network access. Use zero trust principles, even to limit their scope. And I would also say maintaining failback plans, if you will. Can you switch to an alternative supplier quickly? Do you have offline validation of critical data? I think ultimately with the supply chain, it's a cliche, right? Resilience, it's only as strong as your weakest link. So you got to treat your supply chain risk as an extension of your own operational resilience.
Wow. That's seems like a daunting task. So, you know, it's not just an IT issue then. It really permeates throughout the entire company, right? The all levels.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, that's kind of one of the things that I think that people forget. You know, the biggest deal is that, you know, I think people at the top are not getting educated the way they should be. They're seeing all kinds of things, and the lower level guys are just saying, yeah, well, we got this. No problem. No brainer. We got this. You know, you've heard that a lot. So, you know, what are the key components to doing a truly cyber resilient company? What do they need to do?
Always comes back to people, process, technology, right? Integrating those. I would say there would be a couple pillars. As I said earlier, anticipate. Continuous threat intelligence, dark web monitoring, right? If you're in a specific sector, say you do sector specific, what they call ISACs, that means information sharing and analysis centers. Look at the attack surface management, know what assets exist and their exposure. And then you need to do a risk-based prioritization on your assets. Really focus on and protecting what matters most. Another pillar would be, I'll call it withstand, right? Zero trust architecture. What is that? Never trust, always verify. Micro segmentation, right? Limit that lateral movement. And MFA or multi-factor authentication, enforce that everywhere. And then thinking of the NIST stuff, respond. Test your IR plans, right? Have clear roles. Have different matrix. 24/7 SOCs, or managed detection and response, MDR. And legal and comm playbooks in case if there's breach notifications, right? Then you get into recover. Immutable air gap tested monthly for restoration. You have to define RTOs and RPOs, recovery time objectives and recovery point objectives. And then have alternate work protocols. What are the manual workflows if you have during outages there? Since we're talking resiliency, I guess another pillar would be to adapt. Post-incident reviews, I call them blameless postmortems, that feed into improvements. In the military, we call those AARs or after-action reviews, but you got to make sure that no one's being blamed. Have adaptive security controls based on those lessons learned, and have regular red team and blue team exercises. But from the executive perspective, you said govern. Clear accountability from the board down to the individual contributors. Have cyber risk integrated into the business decisions, whether that's product launches, M&As, and so forth. And I would also say, can you develop metrics that measure resilience, not just compliance? Those would be my pillars.
Yeah, and I guess the thing is, that's basically what you guys do at Acronis. I mean, one of the biggest deals that I can see here is how do you get everybody, from the bottom of the organization all the way to the top getting to this? And I guess, what we're going to talk about, we're going to discuss that in the next couple of segments here. But coming up next, we're going to look at the biggest dual threat, affecting every business in 2026. Now, that's where we were talking about vendor risks and AI power adversaries. So, everybody, stay with us and be safe.
And we're back. I'm Jim Bradfield, and this is Ever-Changing Technology here on Now Media Television.
Welcome back to Ever-Changing Technology. You want to stay informed of the latest innovations? Watch all Now Media TV programming live or on demand on Roku or iOS. You can also watch it on the podcast version. Now that's at www.nowmedia.tv. Stay connected to business, tech, and more anytime. So welcome back to the show. We're continuing our discussion with cybersecurity leader Steve Brining. In this segment, we are going to dive into a new reality, AI-driven threats and vendor risks that disrupt businesses long before a cyber attack even hits. As companies integrate more vendors and more AI tools, the attack surface is going to grow, and so do the tasks, the risks, and the tasks. The challenge for organizations today is that attackers are now using AI to automate and scale attacks beyond human speed. So meanwhile, companies depend on vendors who themselves may have weak cybersecurity, making them gateways for breaches. AI resilience is becoming just as important as cyber resilience. So Steve, what is AI resilience and why is it different from traditional cyber resilience?
That's a good question. Even in our company, we're really, really investing in this area pretty heavily. But to me, I guess AI resilience, it's the ability for a company to well, I would say safely, adopt and operate and also recover from failures that involve any kind of AI systems, whether that's something you built internally, it's procured from a vendor, or targeted by a malicious actor. So unlike traditional cyber resilience, which we talked about earlier, which really focused on data and system integrity there, AI resilience needs to also protect, I'll call it model integrity, decision logic, data provenance, if you will, and more importantly, ethical outcomes. But AI systems also introduce some very unique failure modes, the data poisoning, corrupting the data, right? The training data that would skew model behavior, model stealing, if you will. They extract proprietary logic via, say, API queries. Then you have adversarial inputs, which will trick the models that you have, and they'll subtly alter inputs. For example, say a stop sign misclassified as a speed limit, right? As an analogy. I don't know if that's the best analogy, but hope that makes sense. And also prompt injections, like in LLMs or large language models, forcing the model to reveal secrets or perform unintended actions, right? So from a vendor perspective, resilience means shipping models that would be robust, monitored, and explainable. From an attacker perspective, well, AI offers more new attack surfaces for them: automated phishing, deepfake social engineering, evading detection via, I'll call it, adaptive malware. So the AI resilience is not just about keeping AI safe, but it's also preventing AI from becoming a weapon of liability, or a liability, if you will.
Yeah, that's that's pretty in depth. I mean, that somebody's going to have to go through a lot of detail to make sure that works. So, you know, we talked a little bit about AI vendor risk, but you know, why should a company worry about that AI vendor risk in 2026, especially?
Well, my opinion, coming into 2026, let's face it, AI is going to be embedded practically everywhere. HR hiring tools, financial forecasting, customer service chatbots, supply chain optimization, right? All over the place. But a lot of organizations aren't going to build it themselves. They'll either buy it or integrate AI from some third parties. And that does create some risks, right? We'll call it black box models, right? Vendors may refuse to disclose the training data sources, their model architecture, or bias in the mitigation steps. That's hard to make validation impossible. You may have lack of service level agreements for AI behavior. What happens if your vendor's credit scoring AI suddenly starts rejecting qualified applicants due to data drift? And we talked about supply chain attacks. Compromising one AI vendor, say it's a SaaS analytics platform, well, that can cascade into hundreds of customers, kind of like the SolarWinds thing, but with algorithmic impact. Model decay. AI models can degrade over time as real-world data does shift. So if vendors don't monitor or retrain, their smart systems, if you will, become dangerously inaccurate. So to be resilient, I would say AI procurement policies that mandate transparency, data lineage, model cards, things like that. Have contractual clauses for model updates, incident reporting, and audit rights. And even have internal AI red teams, if you will, to test the vendor's models for bias, security gaps, as well as robustness.
Yeah, that's an awful lot to do. So attackers are using AI to outmaneuver the defenders, right? I mean, that's what we just are talking about. That's really kind of an issue, right? That you get a lot of, you're just getting too many sophisticated people attacking every day, right? So what are the key pillars of AI resilience for both vendors and defenders?
Well, first off would be like secure development. From a vendor side, obviously use secure coding, harden down your models, even do adversarial training. From a defender side, well, I would require evidence of that secure development. Right, audit the pipelines of the model. We talked about transparency. look at the vendor's responsibilities is to kind of look for bias assessments there, right? And the data sheets and the model cards. From a defender side, organization, if you will, responsibility, reject black box AI for critical uses, right? Demand the documentation. Another area, let's see, transparent monitoring. You can, from a vendor perspective, I would offer real-time model reporting and explain things. From an organization side, I would integrate vendor telemetry with, say, their internal SOCs or SIEMs. Incident response, from a vendor perspective, notify customers of any kind of model compromises or data breaches rapidly. If you're an organization, I would test joint incident response plans with the vendors and define breach notification service level agreements. You got response and then recovery. From a vendor perspective, recovery, support model rollback in case anything happens, right? Retraining it, failover options. From a recovery perspective, if you're an organization, maintain the fallback processes with a human review when AI fails. And I always talk about this with ethical, all right? Ethical guardrails with things, right? Vendor side, I would embed fairness, privacy, and even safety constraints. But from a company side, I would align the vendor AI with the organization's overall ethical principles. So AI is risk is really shared, but the accountability is really the companies. You know, regulators, customers, and boards will hold the organization responsible, not your vendor, when an AI system causes harm. So think about this, Jim. If a biased hiring AI from a vendor discriminates against protected groups, for example, you may face a lawsuit, not the vendor. That's due to limited liability clauses, right? Or say an attacker uses some public chatbot to leak customer data via those prompt injections I mentioned earlier, well, your reputation is going to suffer. If a financial forecast AI fails during a market crash due to unmonitored drift, your shareholders bear the loss. So what would be the role in AI governance? Well, I mean, AI resilience, governance. Have an AI ethics and risk committee. Validation, independently test those vendor models for, what do we say, security, fairness, and, well, robustness. And monitoring, track the model performance, right? See if there's data drift going out there. And then finally, I would say incident playbooks. Include AI-specific scenarios in your incident, like toxic output or model inversion attacks.
Wow. So, you know, that's an awful lot to do. And I'm assuming that that's why somebody's going to want to get to Kronos and talk to you, right? Because that's obviously very clear. That's way above anybody else's pay grade without having cybersecurity specializing in their background. So where can vendors learn more about your cybersecurity insights and leadership work?
Well, I mean, you know, Kronos.com, we have everything there. Again, we're one agent, one console. It's all natively integrated. So from all the cybersecurity solutions that we offer to backup, to disaster recovery, to RMM type tools, it's all built in together and it's natively integrated, which really has an impact when you want to remediate an entire incident. So yeah, you can just check out at Kronos.com and see what we do there.
That's awesome, man. Okay, up next, we break down one of the most important frameworks shaping cybersecurity decisions today, the NIST AI Risk Management Framework. Don't go anywhere, we'll be right back.
And we're back. I'm Jim Bradfield, and this is Ever-Changing Technology here on Now Media Television.
Welcome back to Ever-Changing Technology. We're here again with Steve Brining, breaking down the tools and frameworks leaders need to navigate the AI era. So one of the most important is that the NIST AI Risk Management Framework. Now that's something many companies have heard of, but I bet don't understand yet. So we're gonna be talking about the challenge for many organizations with AI being rapidly adopted without governance. The NIST framework offers structure, accountability, and measurable safeguards and helps prevent risks that attackers could exploit. So, Steve, what's the NIST AI risk management framework, and why should cybersecurity teams care?
Yeah, I believe it was first released in 2023, and believe me, it's continuously updated. In the military, NIST is one of our favorite things to look at. It's voluntary, but it's becoming very increasingly influential here in the U.S. for framework to not only just to design and deploy, but to also govern system responsibility for AI. And there are four main pillars to it. Of course, govern. That's creating risk-aware culture and policies. Mapping or map, that is identifying the risks or the context, if you will, and the impacts of the systems. Measure, you evaluate, test, and validate the behavior, and then you want to manage it, right? That's mitigate, monitor, and adapt to the AI risks. But they need to be, why do they need to seriously care about this? It's because AI is now embedded in security tools. You know, here at Acronis, it is a big thing that we're doing, right? We have EDR solution, right? But EDR, SIEM, SOARs, fraud detection pieces, phishing analysis, they're all relying on ML AI type models. Well, these new models also would introduce a new attack surface, right? And failure modes, right? There could be bias in anomaly detection, data poisoning, as I mentioned earlier, of say threat intelligence feeds. And regulators and auditors like the SEC, CISA, FTC, they're kind of expecting AI governance. It's becoming almost a de facto standard. So basically, if you're using AI to defend the network, the NIST AI risk management framework, that will tell you how to make sure that AI by itself is not your biggest vulnerability.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, that's, yeah, and again, that's something that you guys are going to be able to discuss with any of your clients. So does that all change how companies evaluate AI powered vendors then? I mean, is that going to be a real risk for them?
Yeah, the risk management framework for AI, it shifts vendor due diligence from say a feature checklist to more of a risk aware validation. Mm. So we talked about the map pillar, right? You have to understand under there what data is being used to train the threat detection model. Is it really representative of your environment? What are the known failure modes, right? This model may perform poorly over encrypted C2 traffic. Is the AI system classified as high risk under frameworks like EU's AI Act, right? But many security AIs qualify in that area. Under the measure area, vendors should provide metrics on, say, false positive negative rates under drift, evidence of any kind of bias testing, meaning does detection accuracy drop for certain geolocations or protocols, and also adversarial robustness testing results. But for me, from the govern side, incident disclosure timeframes, if the AI model is compromised, and the rights to audit or independently test those models.
Awesome. So can attackers exploit the gaps in the framework that the framework aims to prevent?
Yeah, and they already are. They anticipate threat vectors that, bypassing weakly governed AI. So say a SOC uses some AI triage tool, right? And they don't have any govern contracts, right? There's no human review policy. Well, attackers will flood that with false alerts, right? Cause all that alert fatigue, right? And try to hide the real breaches. We were talking about data poisoning unmapped data pipelines, right? If a vendor hasn't mapped its threat intelligence data sources, well, attackers can inject fake IOCs or say indicators of compromise to mislead detection models. You can evade non-measured models. Many commercial AI security tools sometimes aren't tested against adversarial examples. So attackers may craft malware that looks normal to the model, but it's malicious, right? So it slips through undetected. And then I would also say exploiting poor management practices. So if a company doesn't monitor model drift, right, that's under the management area, then an attacker waits for the model to degrade, and then it will strike when the detection accuracy is lowest. So in essence, the NIST AI risk management framework, it's really a blueprint for just closing the gaps that really make AI-powered defenses brittle. So if you ignore these, it kind of exposes you to the next-gen AI aware adversaries out there.
Okay. Yeah. Now, so that framework then is going to apply to offensive AI or red team tools internally, right? Is that correct? And how's that work?
Yeah, ethical red teaming is covered under the risk management framework, under NIST. That's in the govern and the map areas. So when your team uses AI for pen testing, say, or threat simulation, or even doing adversarial, say, ML research, the actual framework inside of it under the map, it will say, okay, what's the intended use, potential misuse, what's the blast radius? I mean, like, hey, could this be, could this AI phishing generator be leaked or abused? Under govern for the ethical red teaming, strict policies, approval workflows, and audit logs. For measuring for that, or the red teaming, the tool's behavior to make sure it's not inadvertently causing outages or data leaks. And under the management area of the red teaming, right, the risk via containment, air-gapped environments, or kill switches, or do you have ethical review boards for this? So the AI risk management framework, it doesn't ban offensive AI, for lack of a better term. I'll call it responsible stewardship. Actually using AI red teaming in alignment with the risk management framework, in my opinion, does strengthen the overall cyber resilience by stress testing their own AI defenses. In that aspect. However, if your internal AI hacking tools lack, say, some RMF aligned controls, well, they could become a compliance liability or a breach vector itself.
Yeah, that's okay. So just let me understand just briefly, how can the teams operationalize the framework today? How do they get that under control?
Well, we had the four pillars, right? Govern, map, measure, and manage. Govern, you have to appoint an AI risk owner in the CISO office. Update your InfoSec policies, right, to include AI model inventory and have various risk tiers. Have AI impact assessments, right, for any kind of new security tool. If you're going to map, maintain a registry. You know, we always do this in risk registries, but maintain a registry of any kind of AI or ML models in the security stack. Document each model's purpose. What's the data sources, right? What's the decision impacting and the threat model? What did I say? Measure, you know, run quarterly adversarial tests on the detection models. Monitor for that data drift, performance decay, if you will. Also validate vendors' claims with your own independent testing. And then finally, with the management or managed area, have, I'll call it the human in the loop for high severity AI alerts. And again, I mentioned this earlier, but establish those rollback procedures for failed AI models and integrate AI risk metrics into your overall dashboard. Wow. And it also aligns with the NIST Cybersecurity Framework 2.0. Right? That's govern, identify, protect, detect, respond, and recover. It actually now includes AI considerations. So they're actually complementary to each other.
Now, just real quick, in the last minute or so that we have left in this segment, will regulators begin penalizing companies that ignore this?
So while NIST is currently voluntary, right? It is becoming a de facto mandatory, if you will, in the regulatory or market forces. Like, for example, SEC guidance, right, last year. You know, public companies must disclose material cybersecurity risks, including those from AI systems. SEC explicitly references NIST frameworks as recognized standards. CISA, and there's under federal agencies, Executive Order 14.110. Federal agencies, right, must use the AI risk management framework. Contractors, including cybersecurity vendors, I believe will soon need to comply with that. In the Europe, right, they have the EU AI Act, right? And that mirrors many of the RMF principles that we have. So if you operate in Europe, your AI security tools may be classified as what they call high risk. Right. And that requires very rigorous risk management aligned with NIST. And finally, I would say insurance and auditors, cyber insurers are beginning to ask, do you follow the NIST AI risk management framework? Well, the non-compliance for that could be raised premiums or void coverage after an AI-related breach. So you may not be fined tomorrow for ignoring it, but if an AI failure causes a breach, say in 2026, I'm sure investigators are going to ask you, did you apply best practices like the NIST AI risk management framework? So if the answer is no, well, you might face legal, financial, or reputational consequences far beyond the incident itself.
Wow. Okay. Well, I appreciate that information because I'm sure there's a lot of companies that haven't been following that. So coming up next, Steve's going to share his top cybersecurity predictions for 2026. Now, that's including the biggest threats leaders should be prepared for right now.
And we're back. I'm Jim Bradfield, and this is Ever-Changing Technology here on Now Media Television.
Welcome back to Ever-Changing Technology. Don't miss any of our conversations on technology, innovation, and the future. Stream all episodes on Roku or iOS, or listen to the podcast on www.nowmedia.tv. We're here for you 24/7. So we're closing today's episode with a forward-looking discussion. Steve Brining has a unique vantage point, combining corporate cybersecurity leadership with military operational insight. So now we're going to turn to the threats, technologies, and tectonic shifts we should expect coming up in 2026. So the root challenge for leaders is staying ahead of rapidly evolving threats. From ransomware evolution to quantum computing risks, organizations that fail to adapt will fall behind attackers who are innovating faster than ever. So Steve, what do you consider the biggest cybersecurity threat in 2026 and why?
Well, I guess this answer would have different flavors and many different opinions. I'll say mileage may vary. But in my view, the dominant threat for 2026 won't be a single attack vector, right? But it's going to be more of an AI amplified multi-stage campaign targeting very critical decision-making systems. I think they're going to combine Gen AI at this point to create very hyper-realistic deepfakes, whether it's voice, video, or email, CEO fraud, or disinformation. Combine that with autonomous malware that learns defensive patterns and adapts to evade that detection. I think they're also going to look at supply chain compromises of these AI ML models or SaaS platforms used across different industries. I think they're also going to combine data poisoning of operational AI, like fraud detection, network anomaly tools, to try to create those blind spots. But a new one that I'm starting to see in the industry is something called agentic AI. That's fundamentally shifting this threat landscape. And quite frankly, Jim, this one scares the heck out of me. Because agentic AI to me, it's autonomously, it will perceive, plan, attack, and adapt to achieve goals without continuous human input. So a lot of them today are very reactive, right? Chatbots, classifiers, but agentic AI can break down complex objectives into subtasks. They can use APIs, browsers, code interpreters, learn from the feedback, adjust strategies in real time, and operate persistently over hours or days. It just scares me. So why does this scare me? Well, attackers deploying agentic AI, let me give you an example. Scan a target organization for vulnerabilities. Then they'll craft phishing lures using, say, OSINT stuff like social media, job posts, press releases. Then they'll test their payloads against those defensive tools, even EDR, email gateways in some sandbox environment. And then they'll keep iterating it until they find a working exploit, and then they'll exfiltrate the data or deploy ransomware, and that's all without human intervention. There's something called living off the land. I think they could do it at scale. Agentic AI can chain legitimate tools, say like PSExec and PowerShell, right, to move laterally, mimicking insider behavior and evading anomaly detection. Can even read the company's own documentation, understand the network topology. And then if it's blocked, the agent just doesn't stop. It can probably, oh, we're going to detect EDR. We're going to switch to a fileless execution. Email flag, well, let's just generate a new persona and try via Teams. Is MFA enforced, right? And then you can get into a vishing call, right, for deep fake. So there's a lot of things it can do. So why do I see this as a tipping point? Technology maturity, right? Multimodal AI tools using AI models, widely available by APIs. Running agent workflows are going to start costing pennies per campaign, and few policies address autonomous AI use, even internally at companies.
Mm. Yeah. All right. So what, you know, how are the new regulations going to reshape cybersecurity? You talked about policies. What, how about regulations? What are they going to do to reshape that?
Again, my opinion, I think 2026 is going to be the year of mandatory cyber transparency. And I think there's a couple of regulatory, global regulatory shifts toward this. One is incident disclosure deadlines, right? We talked about the US SEC rules, public companies disclosing material incidents within 4 days. EU's NIS2 directives, right? Mandate 24-hour initial reporting for critical stuff. And if you delay or do inaccurate disclosures, right? Fine, shareholder lawsuits, executive liability. I also think AI-specific oversight. Right. If you think, I was mentioning the the European AI Act, that classifies many cybersecurity AIs, like I said earlier, as high risk. That requires risk assessments, human oversight, and very robust testing. U.S. agencies like the FTC and CISA, I think they enforce what they call reasonable AI security under existing consumer protection laws. But also, I think third-party accountability. I think regulators are going to increase holding organizations liable for vendor breaches. So if your cloud provider or AI vendor fails, you're still going to be on the hook. And then again, contracts will probably start including cyber clauses, audit rights, and resilient SLAs.
Yeah, and I'm assuming that, you know, you've talked about before ransomware evolving beyond encryption, right? I mean, that's going to involve a lot of things that it's very difficult to find, right?
Yeah, I would say in 2026, this whole classic encrypt and demand ransomware is going to be a minority. I think they're going to shift to some very high leverage tactics like data weaponization. Instead of just stealing data, they may edit or corrupt it. Think about altering patient records, financial transactions, right? Or engineering schematics, right? That just creates chaos that, quite frankly, backups may not fix. ICS or industrial control systems, right? Operational sabotage, smart grids or logistical APIs that cause some physical disruption, right? And then they demand a ransom to restore the functionality. It has nothing to do with data. I think reputation extortion, threatening to release AI-generated deepfakes to mimic insider misconduct, like fake emails implicating executives in fraud, right? That would be a scary one. I would also say insurance-driven attacks. I think criminals will study company cyber insurance policies, and then they'll tailor attacks to maximize payout pressure, right? And probably hitting you just before renewal. So defense, you know, it scares me.
Yeah, that's true. And so you know, can AI fix the cybersecurity gaps that you're going to see in 2026?
The gap won't just be about the headcount, right? It will be what I call cognitive overload and decision fatigue, right? Again, my opinion, 2026, I think SOCs are going to get flooded with AI-generated alerts, both legitimate and adversarial. Security teams are going to have to manage hundreds of these AI ML models, each needing monitoring, tuning, and validating all the time. Junior analysts are going to rely on, say, AI co-pilots, but they'll lack the experience to spot when an AI is wrong or manipulated. But AI won't solve the gap, but it will help redefine it. AI can automate, right? So it can triage, log correlate, even patch deployment. What it can't do is strategic threat hunting, ethical judgment, even cross-domain incident coordination. So what's the real risk to me? I think overtrust in AI leading that leads to complacency. MIT had a study back in this year. I don't remember where it was, but it said that analysts using AI tools were 37% less likely to question false negatives. And I don't remember where it just hit me. So I wish I can, but it was from MIT from that. So I would say a solution I see is to invest in AI augmented, not AI replaced teams. I would upskill the staff in AI literacy and adversarial thinking. I would implement, I said it earlier, human in the loop for the very high impact decisions, and run AI failure drills. What if your detection model is lying? How do you handle that?
Yeah. So let me ask you what the role of quantum computing is going to be. Now, we have about two more minutes left in this segment. Right. I want to make sure that we are able to cover that.
Yeah, real quick. I think they're called CRQCs, cryptographically relevant quantum computers. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to break RSA ECC in 2026, but it's the what I'll call the harvest now and decrypt later threat. It's already there. I think that nation states and advanced gangs are collecting and storing encrypted data, anticipating decryption in 3 to 7 years. Critical infrastructure like defense and healthcare, I think with long shelf lives, they're very prime targets. NIST has a post-quantum cryptography standard that was finalized in 2024. That's early adoption. But some actions: inventory your long life data. Anything needing confidentiality beyond 2030. Begin crypto agility planning, right? Design systems to swap algorithms and prioritize the PQCs for high value assets. Identify those systems, the code signing, and the root certificates. So I don't think quantum will break in 2026, but really failing to prepare for that will break in the future.
Good. Okay. Excellent advice. So, Steve, thanks again for sharing your expertise. Where can people connect with you to learn more about your cybersecurity work?
Yeah, I mean, personally, since this is a work function, people can email me at steve.brining@acronis.com. LinkedIn, you can look me up, linkedin.com/in/Steve Brining. But more importantly, feel free to go out to acronis.com to learn more about everything that we do, especially with our AI and data protection and cyber protection.
Awesome. Steve, today's insights were just invaluable. From cyber resilience to AI-powered threats, you reminded us that leadership in cybersecurity is about preparedness, adaptability, and clarity. So for our viewers, take these lessons into your organization. Resilience is built daily, not during a crisis. Stay curious, stay vigilant, and stay committed to protecting the digital world we all depend on. Thank you for watching Ever-Changing Technology. We'll see you next time.